Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. It is Father's Day, June 21st, 2020, if you are just tuning in with us. And we've got everything you need to know about the show and archives and all sorts of things going back like 10 years at wethepeopleradio.us. So my name's Aaron Ryan.
And my name's Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And if you need John Deere equipment, you need ag tractors, mowers, you name it, they've got it up there in stock and ready to go. Also, they're our local Honda generator dealer. Go by and see them. They've got lots of inventory on hand. And also steel products, chainsaws, trimmers, you name it, they got a big inventory of steel products. And you can reach them at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
There you have it. And you know, we forgot to, okay, I'm using the term we loosely. I've roped you into my we.
Yeah, hold on. This hasn't been pre-approved.
They already had a disclaimer at the beginning.
Yeah.
You should listen more closely next time. We the People Radio is now on TV. Which I know seems confusing, but it is. Robert films it and takes the celebrations of capitalism out and then posts that for Channel 23.7 on Tuesday nights on the American Uncensored Television Network. So that's kind of fun. And that the information for that is also on the front page of the website. So there you have it.
There you are.
Dr. Pry, back to you.
Yeah, we were talking about the Civil War.
Yeah.
And what the reason for the Civil War was, states' rights. But let's dive into that a little bit deeper, because a lot of people think that the Civil War was all about slavery, and that's why we fought it. And maybe you could clear that up a little bit.
Sure. Before I do, I want congratulations on your TV show.
Now you can watch us goof around.
Well, it would be a welcome break from the kinds of things that we see on TV these days.
We left the house just about Chris Wallace's swan song about the Trump rally, blah, 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 and it's like, oh, man, that guy falls in a hole. It's so frustrating.
I also can't help but comment that during the news break, we've learned that another statue of George Washington has been defaced. Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And the incident brought to mind an incident that happened in World War II during the Blitz, when a play was going on in London. I don't remember the name of the play. The theme, though, was the struggle between tyranny versus freedom. And there was an epic soliloquy being given by one of the actors, and there was supposed to be thunder in the background. But instead of thunder, the exploding of German bombs was actually heard, and the people didn't go to the subways. It was they were so transfixed by what was happening at this, you know, something that was relevant to their real lives. Here they were locked in a life and death struggle with Nazi Germany for freedom, and they just stood in their seats during that play, listening to it, and you know, the bombs going off in perfect timing with the play, and here we are, perhaps not in as dramatic a situation, but we are talking about our current struggle for freedom, our attempt to keep our history from being erased, defaced, and rewritten. And even as we discuss these matters, another bomb has gone off with an assault on George Washington. You know, unimaginable to me in the America that I grew up in, but going back to the Civil War.
Yeah, who would have thought George Washington would become unpopular?
I could talk forever about that, and we'll try to avoid talking forever about it so that we can get back to the history of political violence in America. You know, we talked about it in Greece and Rome, but yes.
But this is one of the underpinnings of the current violence, is this really fundamental misunderstanding of history, which is
yes,
why they're tearing down statues and things.
So-called best and brightest on among conservatives. Mm. This represents the war, the Civil War, is a struggle between good and evil, between slavery and free states, and that's how it's misrepresented. And, you know, that's not true. Now, it's true that, you know, that slavery was a, it's one of the things that was a fundamental difference between the North and South in terms of the nature of the civilizations, because we were two different civilizations in the same country growing up, you know. But it wasn't just slavery that made us different. There was a difference in the view of the Constitution. Yes, there was a difference in the economic systems. You know, slavery and agriculture, not just slavery, but the fact that the South was chiefly an agricultural country, whereas the North was primarily an industrial country.
Right.
And it had its own kind of slavery, by the way. You know, if you look at what the working conditions were, you know, for women and little children and men in the industrial factories of the North, and you compare that lifestyle to what the slaves had, a lot of people would have considered to live as the slaves did in the South to be preferable. You know, actually studies have been done in terms of the lifespans. And, you know, slaves actually had longer lifespans than these northern industrial workers. Also, the idea that the North had a friendly attitude toward the North didn't fight, but to cut to the chase, Lincoln himself said that, you know, his object in fighting the Civil War was to preserve the Union. And also, but what he didn't say, it was also to recreate the United States, or maybe it wasn't his intention to do that. I think it was. But I think it was his intention to recreate the United States in the form of a federalism with the big F that we were talking about, where there would be more power coming out of Washington than the federal government, so that the Republican Party, which was a radical party at the time, you know, could start reconstructing and redirecting the society in the direction that they thought was necessary, which wasn't an evil thing at the time. I mean, we needed railroads, we needed canals, we needed, you know, we needed to be able to clean up the cities and have public water systems that worked and a public education system that was better. And so there were a lot of good things that honest, well-intentioned people thought could be better done from Washington. Although, you know, I don't think that ultimately was true, you know, but a lot of people thought that way. Lincoln said that if he could have preserved the Union and freed no slaves, he would have done that. Or if he could have freed some of the slaves and left others in slavery and preserved the Union that way, he would have done that too. Or if he had to liberate all the slaves in order to preserve the Union, he would have done that too. So out of his own mouth, you know, the great liberator admitted that that was the case. And certainly it wasn't the motive among the Union soldiers. I mean, only in about 10% of the North was abolitionist. The idea of the working classes in the North didn't want the slaves free. You know, they were afraid that they were going to come up there and take away jobs. The greatest killing of blacks that happened in American history was done in New York City in 1863, shortly after the Battle of Gettysburg, because that's when, you know, the Union losses were so great that Lincoln had to pass the Draft Act. So that we were drafting people into the army. The issue was constitutionally questionable about whether the federal government had the right to do that. But that's another one of those things that sort of went out the door about you know, the expanding power of federalism. And the draft was enforced with bayonets. The New York City draft riots broke out, and I think over 100 blacks were lynched in New York City, you know, by, you know, rioting mobs of workers who were opposed to the draft and didn't want to go into the army to fight to liberate black slaves. So the idea that we've got this enlightened North that's all against slavery and that's why the Civil War was fought, no, that's not true. It worked out that way. It worked out that way, but that wasn't the intention of the political right. leaders of the North. They were more or less forced into it. You know, I think it was the hand of God, you know, to be that forced it. And so did Lincoln. you know, in his second inaugural address, he basically says that, you know, about the how the will of God is mysterious and unknowable, but if the if every drop of blood that has been spilled, you know, by the slaves has to be recompensed by another drop spilled by those, and he didn't just say the South, but all of them, because he, in his second inaugural address, he characterizes the Civil War as a punishment, you know, from God for the sin of slavery. And so I think that's Lincoln's vision that, yes, the fact of the slave system in the South, that was one of the deep historical factors that led to the Civil War, but it wasn't the motive for Washington to decide to invade the southern states and try to force them in. And it wasn't the chief motive either for the southern states to fight that war. The overwhelming majority of the soldiers in the Confederate Army and the Confederate generals, too, were not slave owners. Or many of them, like Lee, didn't believe in slavery. You know, in the end of the war, Lee was actually responsible, you know, because he was such a respected figure, he was the South's only hope. But at his direction, they were recruiting. They didn't draft. They never had a draft, but they were recruiting blacks into the Confederate Army.
Now Lee, because you wore a gray uniform, it's all what color uniform you wore. Or actually, I think if you're just a statue, you get torn down. I'm not sure if anybody even cares who's on or who they're made.
No.
To honor.
It's history.
Yeah, it's history. Time to get rid of it. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and you are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
That's the song that's coming.
Yeah.
Ashley just apprised me the Lenin statue in Seattle apparently is untouched. Huh.
Huh.
Maybe it was just too big to tip over.
They must not have seen it.
There you go. That's it.
Well, I'll bet the Quetzalcoatl statue in Los Angeles is also untouched.
Yeah,
and
well.
Probably the Che Guevara High School. I think you've got a Che Guevara High School in Northern California somewhere.
Yes.
Not in real Northern California.
It probably also remains untouched.
Well, the sad part is a lot of these statues are tearing down are people that actually would have supported their cause. They just don't know their history, so if it's a statue, tear it down. It's just a crime. It really is.
Well, their cause, though, is not freedom.
No.
But that's sort of, I was going to get to that eventually, but maybe skipping ahead. I think what you said is right, that this is unprecedented. Let me just quickly go back to the Civil War, though, and I want to be meticulous about this so that I'm not criticized later. Who's saying, well, what about the Emancipation Proclamation, right? And, yes, Lincoln passed the Emancipation Proclamation in 1862 after the Battle of Antietam, you know, which freed the slaves in the slave states, okay, but not in the border states, because it was against all the countries that were in rebellion. That was done as a war expedient. You know, the object was, finally, you know, there was an understanding, yeah, slavery is helping the Southern war effort. And so, and yes, the 10% of the abolitionists were made happy by that. But the chief reason for doing it was to keep England from intervening in the Civil War on the side of the South. They were very inclined to do it because the cutoff of cotton, which supported England's chief industry, which was the manufacture of cloth and clothing goods, was suffering very badly from the loss of Southern cotton. And so there were a lot of people in England who had wanted them to intervene in the Civil War and let the South go free, and they also considered that to be in their long-term geostrategic interests, that the United States was made weaker by being split in half. England did have a very strong anti-slavery faction, and the Emancipation Proclamation helped prevent, England's intervention. So there were all kinds of other reasons. I'm sure Lincoln himself, was against slavery, of course, but that wasn't his chief reason for doing any of those things. And in fact, another misunderstanding I think people have about 19th century abolitionism, especially prior to and during the Civil War, is the idea that everybody thought like Frederick Douglass and thought blacks and whites could live together. That wasn't the case, even for a lot of the abolitionists, including Lincoln. They thought a lot of the abolitionist solution was, okay, we'll free the slaves and send them back to Africa, because whites and blacks can't live together. That's why there's a nation in Africa named Liberia, and it had, I think its capital today is still named Monrovia, after our President Monroe, and I think the flag still resembles the American flag, because that experiment was actually going on. They were sending freed slaves back to Africa to live in Liberia, because they didn't envision a cosmopolitan future for us where the races would live together in harmony. Now, all abolitionists thought that way, but Lincoln at one point did, and a lot of the northern abolitionists did. So, the North doesn't necessarily have the high ground. The Civil War is a very complicated history, and but what's not complicated is the real valor and genius of Southern soldiers and Southern generals who were fighting. They weren't traitors to the Constitution. Yes, they were traitors to the U.S. government, okay? But is that necessarily a bad thing if you're defending the Constitution? Another thing that Americans have forgotten, important lesson from the Civil War, your loyalty is not supposed to be to the U.S. government. It's supposed to be to the Constitution. Now, the U.S. government, of course, I don't want to use the word confuses, all right? Obviously, if you're applying for a federal job and you're going to work in the Department of Defense or one of the intelligence agencies, swearing allegiance, to protect the United States and all the rest, that you're going to serve the government, is kind of assumed that, well, that's the same thing as serving the Constitution. But the founders didn't see it that way. And if you're a student of history, you understand that there's a difference between the Constitution and the U.S. government, or at least there can be. Our assumption is that the U.S. government is serving the Constitution. But we're supposed to be an educated public, and we're supposed to watch that government like a hawk. Why? Because government is the biggest threat to the Constitution. If it gets too big, it gets too intrusive, it becomes too powerful so that it imposes upon your liberties and the Bill of Rights. That's why we have a Bill of Rights, so you'll know what they are. And if you see your Second Amendment, for example, basically being taken away, maybe that government isn't serving the interests of freedom and the Constitution well anymore. The argument that makes Black Lives Matter so sympathetic to a lot of people, so that we could even say things like, well, we think if George Washington was alive, he'd be supporting the interests of Black Lives Matter. That's because if we take a superficial understanding and believe them, sort of take at face value what the BLM people say, is that, well, we're trying to protect our civil rights because the police are murdering us and we're against this institutional racism and the police are getting too powerful. That's a sympathetic argument. And so we assume that George Washington would support that. And he would if that was all there was to it and if it was true. But I don't think it is true. And, well, maybe I should go, God, I'm skipping past the American history part. Do you want me to, or should I just continue in this vein and sort of cut to the chase?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. And then maybe we can open it up to discussion, where I can kind of recap and talk about the American past and how what we're experiencing today is different from what one might consider constructive political violence in the past. But, you know, there's a big difference here today, because Black Lives Matter, Antifa, they are the face of a totalitarian movement that threatens our freedom, threatens the Constitution, threatens our society. They're not alone, and they're not even the most powerful part of their movement. You know, this is being encouraged and egged on by the Democrats, you know, which are, you know, I've said before on this show that we're not a constitutional republic anymore. Not really. You know, a constitutional republic can't exist when one of the major parties doesn't believe in the Constitution anymore and uses extra constitutional means all the time and only cares about power. You know, they've abused the Constitution with these false impeachment charges. They've weaponized, done exactly what the founders feared most by weaponizing the intelligence community. You know, one of the most important and powerful parts of our national security apparatus, and the Justice Department. You know, the most important, powerful police force, the FBI, in the nation, weaponized those things against the other political party.
And the media allows all of it.
Right. And they're the other element of it. So you've got these three big elements that make an enormous elephantine totalitarian movement that, frankly, seems almost irresistible. You know, the Democrat Party, the mainstream media, most of the mainstream media, except for a few outposts of freedom like yourself and Fox News and One America News, but all the rest of it, you know, is on the left and is not fair and balanced, but is just an endless propaganda machine for the cause of the left, full of lies and disinformation, supporting, you've got the street soldiers, the modern equivalent, well, our equivalent of the brown shirts. They are themselves the fascists, the communists. There's really no difference between them. They believe that political power comes out of the barrel of a gun, not out of the will of the people.
Right.
You know, they don't believe all people are equal.
No, and it's about silencing your
when you think
critics.
About it, seeing white people going on their knees, you know, this is not because it's some kind of a racial thing that I find it so abhorrent, but because it's like bending your neck to have your head cut off, and it's disrespecting the principles of equality before the law that have been in the making since ancient Athens, and it's at the very foundations of Judeo-Christian civilization that we are all made by God, and we don't have equal talents, but we have equal rights. And those rights aren't given to us by the state. They're given to us by God and nature. We're born with them. And when you bow and go on your knees to somebody, you know, you're basically surrendering. You're saying, you're superior to me. You occupy some moral high ground that's better than me. You're a better person than me. You're a better race than me. You're deconstructing Judeo-Christian civilization.
Well, which in and of itself is racism, because if everyone is racist, then no one is. I mean, you can't have it's just not possible. We've got to take a really super quick break, and yet let's not lose that thread, because I'm not and people don't feel good about standing up against that. So tools and information, I think, would help folks at this point. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
So oftentimes it happens. We
We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone. Another brick in the wall.
Oh,
all in all, you're just another brick in the wall.
Just give that a moment to soak in.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Bride.
Uh-oh.
Did we lose you?
He's in the cone of silence.
This idea of...
There he is, he's back.
...going down on the knees and all the rest.
Yes.
You know, not only should it feel dehumanizing to people, but it is, in fact, dehumanizing. It makes you... It lays the foundations for a new Holocaust, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As hard as that may be to believe, people didn't believe... and are still puzzled, and we have museums dedicated to how did the Holocaust happen in Germany? And Russia, communist Russia under the Bolsheviks, had it a worse Holocaust. More people were killed for politically incorrect views in the Soviet Union than were killed by the Nazis, you know, during their Holocaust against various minorities, particularly against the Jews. And communist China beats the Soviet Union from its cultural revolution. It can happen when you become a totalitarian or an authoritarian state. In fact, it has to happen. We become a totalitarian, authoritarian state because there's always going to be those stubborn minorities who are unwilling to give up their freedom, to accept that they are inferior, to give up their God-given and natural rights. And totalitarian and authoritarian movements can't tolerate that. And that's why they are willing to use violence and are using violence now, you know, beating up on people who are not like them, attacking Trump supporters, you know, attacking the culture. And that's also a feature of all totalitarian movements, a clear sign of it, and one of the things that sets it apart, as was said at the beginning of the show, from all the other movements that America has experienced in the past. You know, this happened in the Cultural Revolution in China, happened in Russia, happened in Nazi Germany. It happened during the French Revolution, during the worst of the French Revolution, during the Terror. You know, what they want to erase the past and then rewrite the past. They even wrote a new calendar during the French Revolution. You know, the object is to brainwash the masses, the people, to reinvent convince people that the past is irredeemable and evil and needs to be rejected so that you can start with a blank slate and the totalitarians will write upon that black slate. BLM and Antifa and the Democrat National Committee want to be able to write upon the blank slate of your mind their vision of a new America, you know, which envisions basically if their agenda is enacted, they can't implement their agenda of economic control to avoid the alleged climate disaster that looms upon us in just 12 years and overcome the deeply embedded problems of institutional racism, which are so profound that even cartoons have to be corrected and our statues have to be torn down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this can't be done in a liberal, tolerant, cosmopolitan society. It can only be done with totalitarian means. And they will be happy to do it because, to take Barry Goldwater out of context, you know, extremism in the service of quote-unquote liberty is no vice. Goldwater was right, of course, but he was talking about liberty in terms of defending the Constitution and defending the kind of society we are or were in Goldwater's time. You're not remaking us into this Marxist, socialist, atheist, racist, dystopian system that the left has in mind for us, and it will be all those things. How do you convince people that by public policy, by biological race, that there are two biological sexes, is inappropriate, and that the bit more important reality is 26 genders? You know,
yeah.
To take that one thing, it's going to take violence, you know, to have people re-educate their children in elementary school, to make them to be okay with that. And one has to fight back and stand up for this. And that's what you're doing, that's what I'm doing by trying to speak out. Of course, these people don't, I don't expect one can implement, you know, you can't reason with totalitarian movements. But there's something else I do want to say about this. I don't want it misunderstood, but a lot of people feel in their bones that the Black Lives Matter complaint and the Antifa complaint and the complaint of a lot of protesters who don't belong to either of those movements, that the police are out of line, the police have gotten too much power, that the police kind of have a license to kill. They feel in their bones that that's somehow right, that argument is right, and the police power has to be rolled back. And I think that's right, too. Not because BLM and Antifa are correct. You know, they're taking a real problem and distorting it and using it, capitalizing, as it were, to try to turn it toward their totalitarian ends. Believe me, the police power that they will have when it comes to enforcing their value system will be Gestapo-like compared to the modern, and like the KGB, it'll have to be.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, those guys get their hands on the levers of power.
Sure,
right?
It'll have to
for all their complaints right now. But to complete this thought, why do I think there is a problem, a structural problem, but it's not a racist problem? I think the problem is actually more profound than that. You know, and maybe it can be understood because we've talked for a long time about the context of history and where we were and what the founders expected. You know, the police have to enforce the laws. And as the state has grown more and more powerful, it has passed more and more laws that get more and more intrusive into our lives, so that we are, as a society, I think the founders would be ashamed of us, and they would find modern American society unrecognizable in terms of what they intended in the Constitution. You have to get a building permit to put a fence on your property, and it can't be of a certain height.
Yeah.
On property that you own yourself. You know, we routinely have to submit to, I'm not saying we shouldn't have traffic tickets and the like, okay, but they've become so commonplace, and they're used for another way of taxation, you know, that it's like the relationship between the American people and the state has become a lot. It's almost a feudal relationship now, you know, so that the police serve as, you know, in the cartoons, the bad guys for the evil prince who lives in the castle. They come down, they grab the peasant and shake him upside down to get the coins out of his pocket. We were never supposed to have an income tax. It didn't have one, you know, until I think it was 1913. The founders didn't want the federal government to be able to have the pig trough of being able to consume, to tax people directly, because they feared the government would grow so big it would eat out the substance of the people. I'm not saying the police are bad guys. I think 99% of the police are good guys. Most of them are conservative. But they have been put in the unfortunate position of having to enforce the laws that have been passed by elites at the federal and state level that have become so intrusive.
Yeah.
We've been moving for decades toward a soft authoritarian, a soft totalitarian kind of a system. You know, people are defending the idea that suddenly your natural rights and your individual sovereignty is suspended when a police officer stops you, and you have to behave like a slave in the presence of a police officer. And I don't think the founders would be okay with that. You know, we've got these professional police departments that are so removed from the people that the idea of proportional force and, you know, for all the politeness one may have when you're writing traffic tickets and arresting people, you know, I think it has gotten out of hand. I think there are too many laws. I think the state and federal governments have gotten too powerful. And I think that's why the police are so unpopular. They're the ones that get the blame.
Right.
But the ones who really deserve the blame are the power elites at the state and federal governments who are putting the law enforcement officers in an impossible position.
Exactly.
Let me tell you a story.
Well, hold on. Hold your thought on that. We've got to take one more quick break before the top of the hour.
Don't lose the story.
But I want to stay on this vein because that's an excellent point that the police...
They don't make the laws. They just carry them out.
They have to enforce these silly laws that politicians are...
Especially out here in California. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
A generation lost in space with no time left to start again. So come on, Jack, be nimble, Jack, be quick. Jack Flash sat on a candlestick, 'cause fire is the devil's only friend. Oh, and as I watched him on the stage, my hands were clenched in fists of rage. Angel born in hell could break that Satan spell, and as the flames.
This old man and me were at the bar, and we were having us some beers and swapping night on cares, talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace and all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
There you go.
There you are.
That's the whole deal in a nutshell. But, you know, you were right on when we unceremoniously preempted you. The police don't pass all these crazy laws. And there is also a huge distinction between elected law enforcement and appointed law enforcement. So your city police are operating at the behest of your city council. And your sheriff's department is following an elected official. And usually, in most places, those are really different. Those are really different groups of people, and different attitudes.
Quite right. Well, we don't have a lot of time left.
No.
I'm not sure I have enough time for my anecdote.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I'll try to tell it quickly.
You have like 9 minutes.
All right. You know, oh, maybe it was 15 or 20 years ago, Ruth is my wife, we were in our 40s, my son Frank was, I think, 8 years old, and we were on vacation in Virginia Beach, and she was walking her dog. We were together walking her dog on the beach, and a young police officer came up and stopped us, and told her she couldn't walk the dog on the beach. You know, that we had crossed an invisible township line out on the beach into another township that prohibited walking the dog on the beach. And my wife, Ruth, you know, didn't argue with him. She was just...
Uh-oh. What happened?
I don't know. He got cut off.
Oh, no.
Maybe you crossed into an invisible township.
He was on the beach.
The invisible township of silence. Dr. Pry, are you in there? Well, there's sirens outside. Does that mean anything?
Oh, darn
it. We just got to the good part, and he was worried he didn't have enough time. We had a technical issue.
Well,
maybe we can call him back.
Try to call him back and see if we can get him on another line there.
Catch him before
that one died.
Too late.
Could have been the NSA. Could have been the Chinese. There's a lot of players out there. You don't know.
But not having the police. While we have this little time filler, I was just looking up the thing in Minneapolis.
It's not working out well for him up there.
Well, he took her away.
Hey, he came back.
Took my son and had to wait.
Dr. Pry?
To let her go, okay?
Oh, but wait, you have to go back. We missed about a minute. You were totally silent there. You crossed into an invisible township line, and then you went away.
Yeah, you were, last we heard, you were walking on the beach.
Okay.
Sorry.
We crossed an invisible township line, and then a young police officer showed up to tell us that we were in a new township and you couldn't walk the dog on the beach. He was a 20-something police officer. We were in our 40s. My 8-year-old son was with me, my son Frank. And, my wife, as you women are inclined to do, you didn't hear that, but I'll repeat it for you, decided to, to pick a polite fight with this officer over whether that law made any sense. Because she thought she should have the right to walk her dog. And wasn't that a silly law? And she did it in a nice way. She wasn't argumentative or bad. But apparently he took offense and decided to handcuff her in front of me and my 8-year-old son and take her away in the patrol car.
Stop it.
And I knew, cow.
And at that moment, I faced a crossroads in my life. And I thought I was torn between, should I let this punk do this and humiliate my wife and me in front of my 8-year-old son? Should I fight him? Or should I, I knew if I did that, I was getting into felony territory. Maybe even get killed by this person. And I knew in a flash, I thought, this is a dilemma that poor black families confronting the police probably face every day. And it probably accounts for a lot of the crime, where officers don't use their judgment, and they don't feel responsible for de-escalating, but are much more interested in exerting their power and control instead of they are in de-escalating and solving problems. Maybe psychologically, American police should take a lesson from Britain's bobbies, who have a much more sedate and are not focused on control and power in the relationships. Anyway, I just had to stand there, and take it, got in the car, followed the cop to my to his police station, where he held my wife for a couple of hours before he let her go. We wrote a letter of protest later, but I think that's an example, an example of an experience I've had, and I'm sure a lot of Americans have had, and it doesn't have to do anything with racism, but it has to do with passing too many laws and having police who have the wrong attitude in relationship to American citizens who are equal to them. We're equal to them in the eyes of God and in the Constitution. We're supposed to be regarded as citizens to them, and they are citizens too. They're not supposed to be so superior, that there's a little bubble around them when they come into your presence that suddenly your natural rights go away and your dignity as a human being goes away. That happens, I think, a lot in our society. So I think there is a lot of room for reform of the police. But again, I'm not blaming the police chiefly. I'm blaming those idiots that pass laws like the one that make it an arresting offense to walk your dog on a beach in some township. We've got too many laws on books like that. Now, to the Black Lives Matters, the greatest fault, among our racial minorities, who feel that the system is racist and oppressive of their rights. If they want to know what the real chief reason for all of their problems is, they should look in the mirror. They've got the right to vote. They've lived in Democrat cities like Detroit and Chicago and Washington, D.C., all the places where they feel most oppressed and where the poverty rate is the worst and the crime rate is the worst. They've got the power to vote these people out of office, but they vote Democrat decade after decade. If they really think that their systems are institutionally racist, it's their own fault. if they put Republicans in charge of their cities for 60 years, you know, the Democrats have controlled and taken the black vote for granted. You know, if they gave Republicans a chance in these cities, you know, they basically, the Republicans would do whatever they want. And I have a lot of ideas about, I don't know, let me see how much time we have. What are some of the other things that could be done? I guess we've got 3 minutes. I'll throw out one more idea in the last time, and I want to leave you guys a little opportunity to make a comment. Can you hear me, by the way?
Wait, absolutely. Yeah, go
totally
ahead.
Fine.
Okay. All right. Antifa. Here's one. I'd like to see a law. If we have to have all these laws, why doesn't somebody pass this law? You know, that the universities be held responsible for the damage that their students are doing. And the deans and the professors who are teaching these kids that violence is justified against our illegal system, I think they should be personally liable. So that the Korean grocery store owner who has had his shop destroyed by Antifa or by Black Lives Matters, you know, who've been in these courses, you know, who have received, been brainwashed by these guys, they should also be personally liable. So the universities should be institutionally responsible and have to pay for this damage. And the professors themselves, they should be suable, you know, by the victims, you know, of Antifa. Their students, their brown shirts that they're sending out in the streets. But there's a lot of things like that that we could do. And those are just a couple of my thoughts about, well, what we can do about the current situation, which is unprecedented. You know, this doesn't fit into the... A lot of the political violence in American history has actually been constructive and made us a better country, although people didn't think so at the time. This isn't an example of it. You know, when you're tearing down statues and trying to erase history, a clear sign of a totalitarian movement. And they are clear, and we've never also had a movement before that is so powerful because it's backed by one of the major political parties and by the mainstream media. You know, this is all the earmarks of a revolutionary totalitarian movement, and we need to stop it. We need to stand up to it and fight back.
Yeah, because this isn't something that ends productively. This is something that ends poorly. As we're seeing, I mean, you're looking at Seattle. That's not becoming a nice, you know, they're not growing vegetables and hanging out, you know, in drum circles.
No, it's
running around with guns and
it's
didn't
turning
get
into
shot?
Mayhem. Same thing with Minneapolis. I mean, the crime right there.
Can't get
the
rid
murders.
Of law and order. There's
you,
a
you can't.
No, there's and, a reason for that. Well, but, everybody else is a victim at that point.
Yeah.
Dr. Pry, we have, can you believe, burned through another 2 hours right here, even on Father's Day. Time goes quickly.
Thank you very, very much. That was you made some excellent points there, and I'm glad we talked about history.
Yep.
Because they're trying to erase it.
Absolutely.
And it is what it is. We need to know it so that we, in a lot of cases, we don't repeat it.
We're going to chat with you more about history and some other things next time we see you. Thanks again. Happy Father's Day, everybody. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.